y'all, this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey, Y'allitics is on the road this week, and we are at a brewery in Dallas that I've been wanting to go to for a long time. I've passed it. I've had their beer, but I've never physically been here. It's the Texas Ale Project, just west of the skyline on Riverfront Boulevard.
Right in the shadows of downtown Dallas, veteran-owned. And I looked up a little history, because you know I'm always the researcher here in this team.
Those odd journals you look at all the time,
I looked at their website, and I didn't know this. This is they say they're the first brewery and tap room to be built from the ground up in the city of Dallas since the late 1800s.
How long have they been here, I wonder?
I don't know, but that's
a new place.
That's a staggering period of time, you know, to be able to claim that you're the first one. It feels kind of historic.
This is the design district for folks who want to come by here. And you probably had, they have two very popular beers. Mm-hmm. One that I used to drink all the time, still do, is Fire Ant Funeral. Mm-hmm. It's an amber. It's really good. The one I haven't had in a while is Texas Blood, which is a blood orange IPA. Mm. And I think of all the names of the beers here, 100 Million Angels Singing, Dank Cerveza, Wealth Over Riches, I'm having the Pain Pilsner. I think you have the best name of a beer here today. And it's very apropos for you. I think it was a good selection. What are you having? What are you drinking?
It's called the Caucasian. And
spot on.
It is. But it gets even more spot on from there. He says, the guy says, let me let you try it first because it, and then he, you know, is like looking for words. He goes,
an acquired
taste?
It is
what it is. And it's an acquired taste. And I thought, gosh, this is describing me. Whether I like that or not, I'm going to have that one now.
Indeed. You are an acquired taste. See, our listeners don't know that as well as the rest of us who work with you.
And that's not a compliment, in case anyone's wondering. What do you have? You have two things here.
I have a little taster. You had, a dozen tasters over there?
I went through several tasters because everything sounded good. And finally, I just had to settle on something because I told him, you know, I'm going to get a buzz just from tasting, and that's not right. So let me just settle on this porter.
This is the I have the taster for the Dank Cerveza, which is a Mexican lager. And then I have a pint of the Pain Pilsner. I haven't had that yet. So I'm gonna try the Pilsner in a moment. I like the lighter beers. You like the fruity beers? I like the lighter ones.
I like the fruity beers, and sometimes I just go for a porter or a stout. So it's a weird,
It is odd.
There's this kind of dichotomy there.
Yeah, so thanks to Steven from the Texas Ale Project for being open, inviting us in, and shout out to him.
It's a really cool place, and very convenient if you're anywhere near downtown Dallas. There is another glass on this table, though.
There is another glass on this table, and I'll let her explain what's in that glass in just a moment. But I was in Fort Worth the other day for a news story, and I saw someone I hadn't seen in a long time, a friend of mine, and I said, hi. And I said, what have you been up to? This is former State Senator Beverly Powell. She is a Democrat from Fort Worth. And we started talking, and you said right away, well, first of all, welcome to Y'allitics, Beverly. I'm getting too far in front of myself here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm very grateful.
What's in that pint glass?
This is water.
Pint
I'm
going to
leave this meeting today. I'm going to go raise some scholarship money, and I think they might like for me to be sober.
And you said if you have a splash of something, the truth might come out or something, huh?
It might. You might hear some things you maybe don't want to hear.
We love giving truth serum on this podcast.
Well, we were in Fort Worth the other day, and I said, well, hey, what have you been up to? And if there's something going on, you know, let me know. Right away, you said, I've been super busy, and I've been doing something that you'd probably care about. I've been raising money to build the new school in Uvalde to replace Robb Elementary. I'm like, what are you talking about? And walk us through, first of all, how this came about, because you were still in the state Senate when this happened, when the shooting happened, May of 2022. And you were in a committee meeting, I believe you said. You started to get some news about this. Tell me how all that unfolded.
Jason, we were having an interim hearing on the Public Education Committee in the Senate. And it was actually one of my very last committee meetings on the day of the tragedy. And about 11:30, we started to get some word through the grapevine that there had been a lockdown in Uvalde at one of their campuses and that they had an active shooter. And we stopped our meeting and said a prayer. And like we usually know happens, we prayed and hoped that it would be resolved without injury and without any real consequence. But as the day wore on, we realized that that was not going to be the story at the end of the day. We realized that there, by mid-afternoon, that there were large numbers of casualties, and it was a devastating day for all Texans. Mm.
And I'm curious, as a lawmaker, I mean, that session was coming to an end there, you know, not to mention the special sessions, though, that were still to come, but that session was coming to an end, and just as a lawmaker, you hear about these things, you want to help as a lawmaker, you want to create policy, you want to do something that affects. Does that tie you in knots in the months that follow, especially when we heard about, you know, the issues with the response and so forth? Does that tie you in knots when you're not able as a legislator to go, okay, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and this to fix it?
Yes. And not just in the moment, but even as this was unfolding, I realized that I wasn't going to likely be returned to the Texas Senate.
Because of redistricting.
Right. And well, I left Austin that day, the day of the hearing, and drove home just in terrible grief. And like most, especially Texans, but people across the nation, we remember where we were on the day of tragic events like this. And I know you guys can probably think back and remember where you were. Mm-hmm. I went home and I lived with that grief for the rest of the week. And finally, along toward the end of the week, my husband said, well, what are you going to do with your grief? What are you going to do? And so I began to think about the meaningful ways that I might be able to contribute to some solutions, that I might be able to help the folks of Uvalde. One of the things we learn as members of the Senate, as any elected official, you learn that you own the entire state of Texas. You own our glories and you own our tragedies and our griefs. And so in that thought process, I determined really quickly that because of my time as a school board trustee in Burleson, mm-hmm. that I knew what it took to build schools. We built $250 million of schools during my time, during the decade that I served Burleson ISD. And I began to think through that. And I realized that the children of Robb Elementary should never, ever have to cross that threshold again. And not only the children, but the teachers and the administrators and the family members were going to be so traumatized that I just couldn't imagine that. So I began to kind of think through how we could make that happen. And I, early the next week, I called a friend of mine, Chris Huckabee, who owns a design firm that designs public schools.
And they do amazing work. Oh. And if pretty much, you know, you can put up a map of Texas and throw a dart.
Oh, yeah.
They've probably done a school near there or an athletic facility, and their portfolio is huge.
Well, it's just remarkable, and they have designers all over the country, but certainly all over the state of Texas working.
So what do you say to him?
Yeah, what'd you say to Chris when he answered the phone?
It was very simple. I said, Chris, if we could raise the money to build a school for the children of Uvalde, would you design it for free? He said in an instant, yes, I will.
Wow.
And so we talked a little bit longer and hung up the phone. The next thing that I know, he has made some phone calls to connect with the Butt Family Foundation and the
HEB
Foundation. Right. He has called a construction firm, the Juris Construction Firm. And all have agreed that it's a project that we needed to figure out how to do. Hmm. Well, where the HEB Foundation came into play here, Chris made a phone call to Charlie Kleins, who is the head of their foundation, and he said, ask Charlie if he thought that they would be willing to donate to our mission.
This is the owners of HEB, right?
Uh-huh.
Right.
And So Charlie said, well, I think so. Let me call Charles Butt, and we'll just ask him and see.
Wow, the head guy.
Yes. Right. And so when he spoke with Charles, Charles said, well, how much do you think we should contribute? And Charlie said, well, I think probably a couple of $1 million. And he said, well, let me think about that a minute. It took Charles Butt about 10 minutes to call back and say, we're going to contribute $10 million.
Jeez, wow.
And he pulled his family together as just family members to contribute that $10 million.
Oh, wow.
And I think, isn't HEB based in San Antonio?
Right, yes. They are.
Nearby,
yes, they
here?
Are.
Well, it's important for our listeners and our viewers on YouTube also to know that prior to your time in public service in the state Senate and with Burleson ISD as a school board trustee, you were also a real estate developer. So this is kind of your wheelhouse. To know how to do some of this stuff.
It is, and it's actually one of the reasons why I wanted to be a school board trustee, because I knew that we were expanding in our district. I felt like I had something to contribute there. I have a deeper understanding of civil engineering and what it takes to make a project happen, project management, and those kinds of things. And it was one of the things that made my service as a school board trustee so meaningful, because I was able to contribute to those projects in that way.
So where is this now? So I think that a lot of people think that when something like this happens, either the kids go back to that same school again after it has been, you know, redone a little bit. In a lot of cases now, they knock the schools down. But I think most people figure, well, that money, you know, the state or the school district or somebody, you know, forks that over and builds a new one. Not necessarily the case.
That isn't necessarily the case. And in fact, there's really no mechanism in state government to build schools, to do capital projects like building schools. And I will say this at the outset, that the state of Texas has come to the table with an appropriation of $15 million, which has helped us to reach our goal. We are, today we stand at $48 million that we have raised to complete this project. And those are foundational funds that have been contributed, in-kind contributions, just like the one from Huckabee Architects and Juris Construction. There are other construction companies that have offered products and services to help build the school. And the $15 million appropriation from the government.
So you have $48 million now. You need $60 million to finish the project. And when I, you know, when we all vet stories, we're like, well, how far along are you? I think I asked you the other day in Fort Worth, and I think you said $45 or $48 million. I'm like, wow, you
yes.
guys have gotten there pretty fast. This you're trying to raise the rest of that money, and I want to talk to you about that in a moment, but this project is going ahead. You guys are starting to get there and going to be breaking ground soon, right?
That's right. We expect to have the official groundbreaking for the project in October. We are we're out for bid right now and evaluating the companies that are going to make bids to do the work. Mm. And so, yes, we are on the road to get our project started. We also have acquired the land for the project.
And where do the kids go in? When will it be done?
It will be done in 25.
In 25, okay.
So we have one more year there. So you need 12 more million dollars.
That's right.
Where do you get that from? Wheeler can Venmo you some, but where do you get the remainder?
You know, we have launched our crowdfunding campaign, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Threads and Instagram and LinkedIn. Everywhere that you look, you can find us by just plugging in Uvalde Moving Forward Foundation. And
is it Uvalde ISD Moving Forward?
It's CISD. Uvalde CISD okay. Moving Forward Foundation is the specific name of our foundation, but you can just plug in Uvalde Moving Forward Foundation and you will get to one of our pages. And we're excited about this moving forward. Right now, the HEB grocery store is in their point of sale campaign, and I think it's until September 12th.
Yep.
You'll have an opportunity to make a contribution at the time that you check your groceries out.
I just saw that the other day at HEB when I was checking out.
I'm so excited. I saw it too, and I'm thrilled to see what happens there.
As part of this, I know that you've been in the community a lot, and you've dealt with a lot of people. You've met so many people. What have they told you? What has stayed with you, I guess, as you've continued through this project? I know you were driven on this from the very beginning, but what has stayed with you from meeting the people in Uvalde?
You know, they are the warmest, most loving people. And as you might well imagine, still very, still living through their grief.
Yeah, will be for a
long time. Still suffering through the trauma of an event like this. But it's been an interesting process. During the design process, we formed a community advisory committee, and we call this a project that is designed locally and built by Texas. Mm-hmm. And that's what it feels like. The design is so Uvalde. I mean, it is elements of the community are everywhere in the new school, from the colors that they've selected that are representative of the sunrises and sunsets in Uvalde and of nature. This will be a campus that houses second, third, and fourth graders. And it will be constructed next to a campus that houses pre-K through first grade. And they'll be able to share new facilities. And that's one of the beauties of this project. They'll be able to share an air-conditioned gymnasium. This will be their first elementary school with an air-conditioned gymnasium.
Wow.
In South Texas?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's incredible to think about. Did you think, looking back now here, did you expect that it would go this far this fast?
You know, I did. I will say that I did expect that it would.
That's because determination then.
Yes, we're all very determined. This is the members of our foundation are all so determined, and everybody's working so hard together to make sure that it happens. I want to say this during our time together. The North Texas region has been incredibly generous. We've received help from everywhere we've looked, but immediately when we started into this project, the Rainwater Charitable Foundation folks just wrapped their arms around us in a way that was just remarkable. And the North Texas Communities Foundation just immediately at a breakfast one morning came over to me and said, I have a $500,000 matching gift for you.
Wow.
And
that matters.
Small family foundations have come to the table to make large contributions. The Communities Foundation of Texas here in Dallas has hosted us on numerous occasions and have brought foundations to the table who have contributed to this project. We've raised in North Texas close to $9 million now, and we're still working through those contacts.
And now that you're opening this up as sort of a crowdfunding opportunity for other people to get involved, just to get this thing over the finish line, again, if you're interested, look for Uvalde CISD Moving Forward Foundation on any of the social media platforms. They're everywhere so that you can click and give there. You know, some people might think, well, I don't really have a lot of money to give. I've got $5, I've got $10. I would just hold out the example that here you were, one person who was devastated and driven and had a cell phone and started making calls. You were one person in the beginning, though, okay? If this person sitting at home is the one person who has $5 or $10, I think that what you've done is indicative that one person, one little contribution makes a lot of difference, because you lit the fire just with a phone call. $5 can help to move that fire along. $10, same thing.
Well, and it's been that way everywhere we've been. We've raised money in Houston. The Greater Houston Partnership has embraced our campaign and they're helping us in Houston. We're raising money in San Antonio and Austin and really all over the state of Texas. Everybody embraces this project. It puts a smile on your face to know that you're doing meaningful work for a community that is so deserving.
Wow. Let me ask you about the new school itself. There's already the 3D animation that people can find on Uvalde CISD Moving Forward.org.
Absolutely.
Explain what the new school will look like. You talked about the colors a little bit. This is going to have different security features. Give us an idea of what this brand new place that's going to cost $60 million, you know, with the generous help of Texans, will eventually look like for kids.
Well, I think it's really important for people to know that this this is a school that was designed largely by input from the community, so that the community gets the school that they want, that they need. The design team was a trauma-informed design team. So they came to the table with such compassion and empathy and caring that they took their lead from members of the community in terms of everything about the school. There will be 36 classrooms. There will be flex spaces everywhere throughout the campus that will be helpful in tutoring spaces and professional development spaces, counseling spaces. Communities that have been through this kind of trauma have unique needs.
And they go for years.
For generations.
Yeah.
You can, when you're down there, you asked me some of the things that I see in the community. One of the things that I saw immediately is that every life is touched in some way. When you lose two educators and 19 children and others are injured and impacted by the tragedy, you see that those tentacles are very
widespread,
prolific.
Yeah.
Even in the design, I thought it was extraordinary that it's down to the every detail. There's a tree that was designed, and it has two main branches and then 19 smaller branches that those hold up, of course, representing the two teachers and the 19 elementary school students who were murdered at Robb Elementary. And what a way to remember them there.
Well, and everything in the school is sort of tied to nature, including the colors, the tree. There are also going to be murals throughout the school. They in Uvalde, monarch butterflies migrate through Uvalde, and so there will be beautiful murals of monarch butterflies. And what you might not notice is that there are 21 butterflies.
Wow.
They also have a honeybee, a honey industry there, and so they're in in other wings, of instructional wings, there will be murals of honeybees. And you won't notice it so clearly, but there will be 19 honeybees in those murals. And it's the same throughout this beautiful building, that the community came together and said, well, here's who we are.
Aren't there bulletproof window elements as well?
There will be, yes. The Huckabee design team is, they are state of the art in terms of safety and security. They will use every technique to their disposal to make sure that every T is crossed, every I is dotted. The school also is built in around a courtyard so that children have a very safe learning environment, and then the entire campus will be secured in ways that protect those children the time.
When we talk about that, though, you were with Burles and ISD, and you all built a lot of facilities. I imagine that these are considerations that go far beyond anything you all had to think of at that time, security-wise. Is this the new way as we build schools in Texas because of this reality that we just keep seeing these mass shooting events?
You know, we built our schools in from 2009 through the early 2010s. Mm-hmm. And those schools were all built with a lot of safety and security in mind. They had the most modern video technology and cameras and secured entrances. All of those campuses that have been built since that time period are secured by very strong fencing. And what you realize, though, is that in rural areas where there is not as much funding available, where their tax base is lower, so their bonding capacity is less, they aren't always able to finance into their packages those kinds of secured facilities.
On our last podcast, we had Dr. Brian Woods. He used to be the superintendent at Northside ISD in San Antonio. And one of the things he said is how it appalls him that after this last legislative session this year, that state lawmakers did not do more to address school security than they did. Of course, you know, for those who are wondering, they did pass a bill requiring an armed guard, an armed individual on every campus. Looking at politics, are you surprised that your former colleagues in the legislature did not do more?
No, I'm not surprised. I really expected that to be the case. And one of the reasons I think why we launched this project is that, you know, as you think through what are the possibilities of things that you could do that would make the largest difference, I didn't suspect from the beginning that there would be a legislative solution in this legislative environment.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Do you miss politics at all?
I do.
You really?
I think I'm not exactly out of it. You know, this feels, you know, even as much as you try not to be political about it, it feels a little political.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, the Republicans who run state government, they're in charge of redistricting. They redistricted you out of your seat. They turned District 10, I believe, into a Republican seat where it was a swing district for a long time. What's next for you? Are you going to run for something else?
You know, politics is all about timing. And if the right thing comes up at the right time, I absolutely would run again. I love serving my friends.
And it sounds like your husband says, what are you going to do to keep your passion alive?
Yeah, well, now he knows.
Well, I'm curious, because you miss politics, would you say that this effort, being part of the Uvalde Moving Forward Foundation, would you say that this is more rewarding than anything you ever did, though, when you were elected?
You know, I think when I look back on this time in my life, it will feel like the most meaningful thing I've ever done. Hmm. And that's not to say that I didn't feel like my service as a Texas state senator wasn't extremely meaningful. I loved every moment of it. I loved every event I attended, every hand that I shook, every baby that I kissed, every friend that I made along the way. And given the chance, I would do it all over again. But this is a different, this is a heart fix every time I think about it. And you can tell when you look at our logo, it is a heart mission from start to finish. And I will say this, that every person involved, from our board leaders, and Brian Woods is one of our board leaders, and has been a wonderful contributor to our project. This will be so meaningful.
But you've done a lot of things, from real estate to public service on the local level to the state level. Now this really is a hallmark for you, a defining moment.
It is. It is. And you know, it needs to be a defining moment for our state. We have a great responsibility to our children, to our families, and the folks who educate our children. It is a defining moment. It's time for us to focus on education and make sure that we do this right.
As you say that, let's go a little bit outside of the Moving Forward Foundation for a moment. In October, it's expected that the legislature will be back in Austin for another special session dealing with education, which is a passion of yours. You are the daughter of an educator.
That's right.
You were a school board trustee, a school board president. A lot of things are going to be discussed that didn't happen in the regular session. You know, things like vouchers, things like teacher pay raises. Do you have a lot of hope for how that's going to go?
Yes, I do have more hope about that. For one thing, we have to get this right. We have to fund education appropriately. We passed tax reform, but along with that tax reform comes a new responsibility to decide how differently are we going to fund public education. I'm hopeful that that the pressure that comes from our electorate will move this toward the right solutions, make sure that our valued educators get the raises that they deserve and the positive attention that they deserve for changing young lives. I mean, I bet you can tell me your favorite teacher, and you can tell me yours, Jason.
I'm Wheeler's favorite teacher, by the way. but go ahead.
Our teachers and our principals and educators are those folks who change the world for the better, and they do it every day. In the most meaningful ways.
In a very challenging environment, too. I want to ask you this, since you talked about pressure from the electorate, because I love talking to elected leaders and people who formerly held office about this. When you were a senator, and be real with us, when people
called... You can have some Wheeler's beer, too. He's not drinking it, by the way, if you need to be real.
That porter is strong. So when people called or people emailed to weigh in on things, how seriously did you take that? And, you know, what constitutes, I guess, enough calls and enough emails for you to go, uh-oh, I better really pay attention to what these people are saying?
And you have to know that senators get thousands of emails a day.
Okay.
And a lot of times we get stock emails.
Yeah.
That
form letters.
Form letters where people are just sending the same thing over and over and over again. And so you look at those emails one way.
Mm-hmm.
You think about the magnitude of the mission that you're hearing about. You look at those one way. And then you get emails from students.
Mm.
And you look at those differently.
Mm.
And you
like high school students would email you?
Oh, yeah. We had lots of students. And my staff knew that if we received an email from a child or a student, that it was to be on my desk immediately.
Wow. Interesting.
And so those messages are powerful. You know, I formed relationships with folks that I never expected on my way in. I became a board member for ARC, which is an organization that advocates for folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought of that as my mission until I got to the Senate, and they started to come visit me and tell me what their issues were, and because of that contact, I became clearly and painfully aware of how we were failing that group.
But how important are constituent calls and constituent emails to you deciding what you should pursue legislatively?
Oh, they're extremely important. I think people don't understand that a lot of times we don't just invent legislation. It comes to us from constituents in our district, and we passed some of that legislation this last time. And it's very important to the success of your mission as a legislator. Those were the most valuable insights that we gain into what Texas needs.
So what I'm hearing here is in October, if you feel strongly one way or the other about any of these things that legislators are talking about related to education, well, first of all, the best thing, the most powerful thing you can do is to vote in primaries and general. But I'm also hearing there that you might want to make a phone call and or an email, but avoid the script, avoid the form letter, and write your own.
Write your own.
You got to be original, Wheeler.
Well,
it's always been hard.
And, you know, I tell people this all the time that you know, we only meet every other year and on special session occasions like the ones that are coming up. But every single legislator has district offices where folks can go and talk to their staff. And let me tell you that the greatest work that happens in that Capitol building in Austin is not necessarily the elected official. Those staff folks know how to get the job done.
And that stuff gets to you. When people go visit the staff in the district office and file a complaint or say, you know, what they want done, that gets to you.
In a heartbeat.
Does it really?
It gets to me. It gets to the legislative council to draft those pieces of legislation.
Huh.
I tell people, don't wait until session to bring your issues. You bring them during the interim,
and this is the interim right now, so for those elected officials.
I feel like we're in a civics lesson
now. I know, right?
Like, this
exactly.
is how you get things done in Austin.
You're
folks.
Our favorite teacher.
Yeah.
hey, but let me ask you this. Wheeler brought it up. So October is likely going to be the next special session. It's going to be about education. He brought up school vouchers. A couple things on this. Number one, I'm curious if you think that a couple dozen rural Republicans who've been standing in the way of this are going to change their mind because they might be primaried. And then secondly, Let me ask you that one first, because I don't want these questions to get mixed up. Do you think that, Governor Abbott will have the votes to get this passed?
I do not.
He's not going to get it done.
I really think our rural legislators are going to stand pat. I think we don't realize when we live in urban areas how important rural schools are.
You've been seeing that in Uvalde.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Everything revolves around school activities.
And it's often the largest employer. There are much fewer private school options, et cetera, right?
Yes, and it's the biggest voter base. When you say it's the largest employer, I tell teachers all the time, you could elect all of your leaders.
Wow. Never thought of it
if
that
If you will
way.
Go vote, you can elect your city council people, your school board trustees, your mayors, all of them.
Here's my next question on vouchers, and I've asked this to every one I've spoken to. I'm not convinced that if this passes, and if it's $8,000, I think was the most recent figure, and it's only for a certain number of students who live in certain areas or folks who might have special needs, I'm not convinced there's going to be an exodus of people leaving public schools to go to private schools with an $8,000 check that they can only buy part of their tuition with. Do you think there will be?
I don't think there will be. But I do think that what it does is it sucks an enormous amount of money out of the public school budget. Mm. And
But how so if there aren't that many people going to do that and cashing that check?
There will be, because the folks that are sending their children to private school already, that are sending their students to religious schools already, will cash a check that they don't get today. Hmm.
And I guess a lot of people are worried too that even beyond that, it's just the slippery slope. Like it's happening. You know, the momentum begins, and then you know what happens in the next legislative session, in the next one, and how does this go further than, you know, 8,000.
Well, you hear this slippery slope argument about almost everything in Austin. So.
This podcast is a slippery slope sometimes. So, yes, we do.
Like weekly.
Exactly.
Well, I really hope that, you know, our listeners will chip in for this project. It sounds like it is a groundswell of Texans coming together to help Texas get past one of its darkest days and rebuild that school for those kids in Uvalde, not just those kids, those teachers, those administrators, those parents, those families, and get this thing done. But wow, just incredible to be sitting across from the table. And it really does make you think, what have I done? I haven't done anything.
You haven't done anything.
I haven't. I mean, well, you know, when you sit across the table from someone who...
Me? Oh, you meant...
No, not you. It's definitely not you. But when you sit across the table from someone who actually just said, you know, I'm not in power to do something necessarily, but I have the power of this phone that's in my hand, and I know someone, and let me make a call and see where this goes. And here we are, $48 million later, with $12 million left to go.
Jason, thank you for bringing it back to that, because it gives me an opportunity to say that this is a mission that is driven by an enormous support group. When you think about having Charles Butt at the top of your support group, that's pretty magnificent.
It's good to have him on your team.
Yes, yeah. And you think about the Huckabee design team and what they went through to be sure that Uvalde got what they wanted, and jurists just standing right there ready to take over and pull those contracts in to deliver those in-kind contributions from contractors and suppliers. And then you think about the foundational organizations across Texas and what they've done to embrace our project and make sure that we get to the end goal. It is a magnificent effort that took the work of a whole lot of people.
And it's not done yet. Uvalde Moving Forward is the name of the organization. $12 million left to go. Is there a deadline to raise that money? Is the school going to be three-quarters built if that extra money is not raised?
You know, we hope that we can raise that money this year, in this calendar year. But if we need to bleed over into 2024, we can do that.
Okay.
So... We're not going to stop until we get it done.
It doesn't sound like you're going to. Former State Senator Beverly Powell, who is now the board secretary for the Uvalde CISD Moving Forward Foundation, asking you for your $5 or $10 or $100, your $10 million if you've got Charles Butt money, to help out to get those kids in Uvalde a new place where they can go. And you're heading out of here now. You said you were going to go do a different fundraiser for scholarships.
I'm going to go to Cleburne, and we're going to talk about how we raise money to get kids into Hill College, into a community college, so that we can get them on a path to a four-year degree.
Wow, you are just in a like reinvention second life here. You're going to be a dangerous, formidable opponent if you do decide to run again, because you're getting really good at raising money here.
Thank you, Jason.
Congratulations.
But for great causes.
Yeah,
great
congratulations causes on all your successes. And I'm glad we ran into each other in Fort Worth.
I am too, Jason.
I
thank
can't
you
believe that. Yeah, it's remarkable how that happens, that you know, here we are a week later and having this having the beer, having the podcast. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Senator Powell, and thank you to the Texas Ale Project.
Yeah.
You know, for the Texas Ale Project who's watching, look at this.
Wow, that
I
is
enjoyed mine. And the Caucasian here, drinking the Caucasian,
yeah,
hasn't finished his.
Well, you
and
finished,
the water girl.
You not only, yeah, you not only finished yours, you finished your little side cup there of the
easy
taste.
Hoss.
So since I have a little bit more, I will toast you for what you're doing.
Jason, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Thank you guys very much. Thanks for watching Yellow Ticks. Thanks for listening to Yellow Ticks if you aren't watching it on YouTube. If you are, thanks for watching it on YouTube as well. We're back next week to take you
into a whole different place.
Who knows where we're going to go next week?
We don't know.
We don't know. We're doing it right after this podcast. So thanks very much, guys. We appreciate it.
Click subscribe and get Yolitics every week. Yolitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.